ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मिरन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यामनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितां तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा श्रीविशाखान्वितांश। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकान्ता श्रीराधाकान्ता नमोस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चना गौराङ्गी श्रीराधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमाओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो रामो हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो राम रामो हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो राम राम हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम ऑल डिवोटीज टू आवर संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम। वी ऑल्सो वेलकम ऑल द गेस्ट्स एंड ऑल द डिवोटीज हू कम फॉर द फर्स्ट टाइम। टुडे वील डिस्कस अ वेरी रेलेवेंट टॉपिक एंड फॉर द नेक्स्ट मे बी वन आवर दैट वी हैव वील डिस्कस ऑन द सब्जेक्ट मैटर अबाउट वॉट इज आर। You all have come to ISKCON temple. You have come for a Sunday feast program here. What is our unique contribution to spirituality? Like, there are so many things you could have done on a Sunday afternoon. Not just so many alternatives for sense gratification, but also for spirituality, you could have gone to so many other places, isn't it? So many churches, mosques, so many Mayavadi organizations. But you have come here. You have decided to exercise your free will by coming to the shelter of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ji. So what is the contribution of Srila Prabhupada or ISKCON towards spirituality, which makes it so special that ISKCON attracts or Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ji is attracting all of you? So Srila Prabhupada's unique presentation or unique contribution is, which is our subject matter for today, is that Srila Prabhupada presented God is great. Now this is all theistic traditions, All religions like Christianity, Islam, everybody talks about this. God is great. Srila Prabhupada's speciality is he presented God is great and God is also very sweet. Greatness of God and also sweetness. And this is the unique position of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Parampara, the Gaudiya Parampara that we are all representing. So we'll discuss this aspect about God. But first, we need to spend substantial amount of time understanding what do we mean by God is great. In simple words, in all religions, God is great means God is a controller, master, proprietor. Everything is moving by his direction. But essentially, the most fundamental understanding about God's greatness lies in the fact that God is a person. God is not some unknown, unseeable, unobservable, unexperienceable, some energy within or some light. Sometimes people say, God is absolute truth, is nothing but light. What light? Tube light? What do you mean by light? Energy. So all these are different aspects about God, God's energy, but God is a person. So once we are convinced of this aspect, that God is a person, and we all can have a relationship with God, then we can discuss later on about God's sweetness. Even if we don't discuss that subject matter today, but at least we go back home today understanding that Krishna or God is ultimately a person like you and me. And we can reciprocate, we can have relationship with him. The 7th chapter of Gita, this reminds me, there's one very nice verse. Because in India, one of the biggest problems is people say, India is a supermarket for spirituality. You get so many varieties of theories and so many concoctions. And the most common is people say, ultimately, God or absolute truth has no form. Ultimately, everything is formless. You know? I don't know if I've heard. I have seen so many places, everywhere it's like that. Or, we are all God. Atma hi to paramatma hai. They say, I've heard some lectures like this. You know, everything is same, we are all God. But what does Bhagavad Gita say? Because everyone who practices spirituality in India in the name of Hinduism or Vedic religion, his book of authority is Bhagavad Gita. In the 7th chapter, 24th verse, Krishna says, Avyaktam vyakti mapannam manyate mam abuddhaya. Param bhavam ajananto mama avyayam anuttamam. Krishna says, whoever thinks I am actually, I've assumed a form, or I'm having this form right now, a temporary form, I'm actually formless, avyaktam, vyakti mapannam. But Krishna has assumed some form. If somebody thinks like this, that absolute truth is ultimately formless, manyate, whoever thinks like that, Krishna says he is abuddhaya. Abuddhaya means no intelligence. Such a person, param bhavam ajanantu, he does not know my superior nature. Mama avyam anuttamam, he does not know my fineness. Anuttamam means fineness. So such a person is a fool who thinks that God is having no form. Abuddhaya. Actually the verse before this is very interesting. Krishna is talking about demigod worshippers. Those who worship different gods. Krishna says, Antavattu phalam tesham tadbhavati alpamedasam devan deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. He says, if somebody approaches different gods for petty things, material things, he is alpamedasam, he is less intelligent. If you approach different gods for sense gratification, then that person is called alpamedasam, less intelligent. And next verse, Krishna says, but those who think I have no form, they are no intelligence. So you see the way Krishna is grading it. Less intelligent people worship different gods, but no intelligent people, they think God has no form. And the next verse, Krishna says, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudoyam na bijanati lokomam ajam avyayam. I am not visible to these foolish people. They can never know me because they don't have that attitude, that simplicity to understand me. Therefore, these people do not know that I am unborn. I am a person. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear. If you read the whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna very clearly establishes that he is a person. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, when he established ISKCON, some devotees told him, Prabhupada, why not name it ISGON, International Society for God Consciousness? Because Krishna is very, people will not accept. People do not know Krishna. Prabhupada said, yes, exactly. Because they don't know, that's why I'm presenting Krishna. No, we should have secular. We should not hurt anyone. We should say God. Prabhupada said, that is very vague. God as a name, God as a form. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada's contention, point of contention was, whoever says God is formless, we should understand that if you say God is formless, that means God is limited. If God has to be complete, has to be perfect, he has to include both form and formlessness. It should be all encompassing. For the formless aspect is an energy of the Lord. But he has a Satchidananda form. He has an eternal, fully conscious, fully transcendental form. He is a person. We may not be able to understand or relate to Krishna as a person, especially his transcendental Satchidananda form. That is our problem. That is not Krishna's problem. You know? Just like sometimes if you go to this, we have Taropuriwala aquarium nearby. If you go there, you will see a fish, many fish ponds, you know, and a lot of fishes inside. So if you see those fishes, for them it's a world in itself, that fish pond. So many fishes, they have their own daily routine, they have their job, they have their family life, they have their own world inside. For a fish, if we were to think, the fish inside were to think about the life outside the pond, you'll not be able to fathom. You are standing outside the fish pond and watching the fishes. But for the fish, you don't exist. So we are all like that fish in the fish pond. We are in our own little world, which is constrained by time dimension, which is constrained by so many limitations. And we think, oh, there cannot be God. That is our problem. Therefore, we should understand that God is a person. This is the first principle according to Bhagavad Gita, and we should accept. I met one senior disciple of Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, Vishwambar Prabhu. And he was telling me that once he was very disturbed. His family life was in turmoil. He went through a lot of crisis. Business was, you know, losing business. So he went to his Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, and told him, Maharaj, I'm very angry with Krishna. So many things are going wrong for me. And Maharaj said, very good. You are making advancement. He was shocked. He said, I am making advancement. But Maharaj, I am very angry. What is this? So many problems that I am getting. And Krishna, why is Krishna doing like this to me? I am very angry with Krishna. And Maharaj said, yes, you are making advancement. And then he asked for an explanation. And Maharaj said, you are making advancement because at least you are now accepting Krishna as a person. You know, you are angry with him means at least you accept that Krishna is some person. Very important to accept Krishna as person. Of course, then Maharaj clarified, we shouldn't be angry with God, we should be grateful to Krishna. But the point, this is the point, that we have to understand Krishna is a person, God is a person. And this is not only the 7th chapter that we have discussed. If you see whole Gita, this message is there. 11th chapter, anybody knows what is 11th chapter of Gita? Universal form. Krishna is showing how he is, the whole universe is within him. And after that whole description, someone may start foolishly concluding that, mistaking that universal form is more important than Krishna's form. So therefore, how does Krishna end that chapter? By showing his two-handed form to Arjuna. And then Arjuna becomes convinced. And he shows that this is the most confidential form, highest form. And then also Krishna tells him, if you reciprocate with me, worship me in this form, then I'll bring you back to me, the spiritual world. But Arjuna foresees future misinterpretation of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, he opens the 12th chapter by asking this question. Krishna, please now for once and for all, you please clarify and tell me for sure, what type of worship is best? Should we worship the impersonal aspect of you or the personal aspect? Clearly bata do. There should be no confusion. Why does Arjuna ask like this? Because Arjuna wants to clarify his own position. He is attached to Krishna's personal form. And he wants to know if his position is secure, if this is highest, if this is the best. And Arjuna understood everything about Krishna, all energies about Krishna. But he did not want any disturbance in his love for Krishna. So he wants clarification. And he wants to establish once and for all, why waste time in impersonal worship if that is not the highest? So to confirm this, he asks Krishna, what is the highest? What is better? Impersonal worship or personal worship? And what does Krishna answer? Maya Veshya Mano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasate Shriddaya Prayopetas Teme Yukta Tamamata. One who absorbs his mind in me, Maya Veshya Mano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasate, always worships me with love, with faith. Shriddaya Prayopetas Teme Yukta Tamamata. He is the highest. Very clear. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, what this means is very simple. You don't have to be a big, big sannyasi or a yogi and go to the forest and do tapasya or do lot of kriyas and asanas and pranayams to realize God. Prabhupada says, a devotee simply, he engages in service 24 hours. He is simply absorbed in service to Krishna. He gets all the benefits and much more than what everybody else is trying to get. Srila Prabhupada writes, what does a devotee do? What does this mean? Absorption in Krishna means, Prabhupada writes, sometimes a devotee will chant Krishna's names. After chanting, the devotee will read about Krishna. He will cook for Krishna. He will go to the market. He will purchase something for Krishna. Whatever a devotee does, he does not allow his time to be wasted in non-Krishna conscious activities. Everything is for Krishna, for God. And this is samadhi. Prabhupada writes there. This is samadhi. When we are absorbed in service to Krishna, that is samadhi. So Krishna consciousness is so simple, isn't it? You just come every Sunday to the temple, offer your heart to Radha Gopinath, offer heartfelt prayers, get yourself charged, go back and do devotional service at home. This is samadhi, remembrance of Krishna. One devotee who goes for book distribution, he shared this story that once he went for book distribution to Bombay Central. And as soon as he got in the bus, afternoon 3:30, he felt an urge to respond to the call of nature. He wanted to pass urine. And his bladder was, you know, pressurizing him. So he thought, I'll go to Bombay Central. I'll get down and first I'll relieve myself. And then I'll distribute books. And as soon as he reached Bombay Central station, around 3:45, he saw Rajdhani Express has already come. And he thought, wow, great chance. Rajdhani. And he forgot about his business of passing water. He said, Rajdhani. I have to catch people before they, you know, before the train leaves. So he ran, distributed books, and at around 4:40 or 4:50, the train leaves. So as the train started, he realized now he has to get on because train is moving. And if you don't get on, what happens? You land up at Baroda. Rajdhani is doesn't stop anywhere. So he got down, and then he saw August Kanti Rajdhani has come, and he ran inside, distributed books. Then 5:40, August Kranti left. He got down and he saw Lok Shakti. He went in, distributed books. Then he came out. Then Avantika Express. Then Avantika. Then Jaipur Fast. Jaipur Express. Then Golden Temple. Golden Temple. Then Ahmedabad Express. And finally, the last train, Ahmedabad train, left at 9:30 in the night. And he was at the platform. And then he realized, oh. And he realized, I have to pass water. My bladder is about to burst. I have to run. And then he somehow managed to find a toilet, he relieved himself, and then he came back on the platform and he was like in a different world, and he was sharing this realization that 3:30 to 9:30, 6 hours, he had forgotten, he had transcended body. He was in Sankirtan Samadhi. So actually Mayavadis and great yogis, this is what their aspiration is, you know, with all that meditation and asana, what their goal is, ultimately to be in such a state of absorption and samadhi that they can go beyond body. That is their goal. But somebody loves Krishna and engages in service of Krishna, he achieves all that result so easily. So Krishna consciousness is very simple. Just chant Krishna's names, cook for Krishna, serve Krishna, discuss about Krishna. And in that 12th chapter again, Krishna finally establishes, he tells Arjuna, Arjuna, I'll tell you the final answer. Klesho diktaras tesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyaktai gatir dukham dehavadbir avapyate. He says, if you worship me impersonally through unknown, unseeable form, klesha, that is a path full of difficulty. ಕ್ಲೇಶೋ ದಿಕ್ತರಸ್ತೇಷಾಂ, ಅಧಿಕ ಕ್ಲೇಶ, ಕ್ಲೇಶೋ ಅಧಿಕ ತರಸ್ತೇಷಾಂ, ಅವ್ಯಕ್ತಾಯಿ ಗತಿರ್ ದುಃಖಂ, ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಫುಲ್ಲಿ ಟ್ರಬಲ್ಸಮ್, ಅಬ್ಯಾಂಡನ್ ಇಂಪರ್ಸನಲ್ ವರ್ಷಿಪ್, ಜಸ್ಟ್ ವರ್ಷಿಪ್ ಮೀ ಡೈರೆಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ ಆಸ್ ಐ ಆಮ್ ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡಿಂಗ್ ಇನ್ ಫ್ರಂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಯು. ಸೊ ಆಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡಿಂಗ್ ಹಿಯರ್ ಆಸ್ ಗೋಪಿನಾಥ್ ಜಿ, ಆಸ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೋಪಾಲ್, ದಿಸ್ ಈಸ್ ದ ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ದಟ್ ಯು ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಟು ಅಪ್ರೋಚ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಅಂಡ್ ವೈ ಡಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಸೇ ದಿಸ್ ಇಂಪರ್ಸನಲ್ ಪಾತ್ ಇಸ್ ಟ್ರಬಲ್ಸಮ್? ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಇನ್ ಇಂಪರ್ಸನಲ್ ಪಾತ್ we don't accept krishna as a person, we don't accept krishna as transcendental senses, we don't accept the fact that we have to engage our senses in service of krishna. So our senses are constantly demanding engagement, the senses want to do something but we have no opportunity because we don't accept krishna. The senses want to contact sense objects but we have no spiritual activity, we have to control them, that's very painful. So that's why it is very troublesome. Whereas devotional service means not controlling senses but purifying senses by engaging them in Krishna service. Of course, I know some people may argue, well, but devotional service is also troublesome. Devotees also have trouble following the four rules and regulative principles, saying no to so many things, isn't it? So how can we say that devotional service is not troublesome but all impersonal path is troublesome? The answer to this question is, devotional service we may have little trouble, but the misery of the devotee is reduced because he is rejecting maya, he is saying no, 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 but it simultaneously he is experiencing Krishna's presence in his life because he is wanting to serve Krishna, so he remembers Krishna. So when a devotee remembers Krishna, so he is rejecting maya's favor, maya's proposal, in favor of serving Krishna. So this remembrance of Krishna fills his heart with actually pleasure. So although a devotee is also struggling, you know, sense objects are attracting him, but he's remembering Krishna, I don't want to fall down. Krishna, I don't want these temptations. Please save me, Krishna. I want to serve you. This one lifetime I want to serve you. So when he's offering prayers to Krishna like this, although he is in trouble because senses are demanding, but because he's now slowly starting to remember Krishna, that remembrance of Krishna fills his heart with a very special kind of joy. And therefore, devotional service is very sweet. Because we can remember Krishna and experience spiritual ananda, pleasure. His Holiness Kadam Kanan Swami Maharaj was once saying, when somebody asked him, have you seen Krishna? He said, I have not seen Krishna, but I have seen Krishna's hand. What he meant? That I have seen Krishna's hand in my life. I have seen how Krishna is interfering in my life. How Krishna is arranging things in my life. And by constantly praying to Krishna, I am seeing how Krishna is orchestrating my life in so nicely. So that consciousness of Krishna fills the heart with joy. So therefore, this is the first lesson that we have to learn today. That Krishna or God is a person. And especially from the Gita, we are quoting so many shlokas. Very important. Because in India, the biggest problem is people, they establish God as no form on the basis of Gita only. Because it is so natural to love God, so natural to take shelter of Krishna, but the propaganda is so massive that there is no form, God is not there. And naturally we get angry, how can you say that? God is no form. So what does Mayavadis do? No, no, we are not saying, Bhagavad Gita is saying. But then you cannot do anything. They take a gun, put it on the shoulder of Bhagavad Gita and fire. And kill our innocent bhakti. Actually, to love Krishna is so natural, isn't it? For a child to take shelter of his parents is so natural. Similarly, for a conditioned living entity, to take shelter of God is very natural. Forget logic part. Logically, we can prove through Gita that Krishna is a person. Even common sense, you know, we all need shelter. And these demoniac people, they quote scriptures and they kill our bhakti. And then they say, oh, Bhagavad Gita is saying. That's why we need to know. 9th chapter of Gita, 11th verse, Krishna says, Avajananti maam moodha manushim tanum ashritam. Whoever thinks I'm a human, I've taken this human form, I'm actually impersonal, is moodha. Krishna criticizes foolish, rascal, repeatedly, and we have to quote these shlokas, we have to understand these shlokas. Otherwise, we'll believe the Mayavadis who say Krishna Swami is Maya. Like when we were young, we used to see these Bollywood movies. Typical story, you know. So somebody is murdered, lying on the bed, murdered with a dagger on his stomach. And the innocent person, the hero, he comes in and he sees the dead body, picks up the knife. And as soon as he picks up the knife, what happens? Police comes. Practically, so it's a clished affair, you know. In practically every movie or every movie which has murder scene, this is the story. So predictable affair. Somebody murders and goes away, and the hero comes, innocent fellow, and he sees, oh, murder, and he picks up. And then he says, I'm innocent. No, see, dagger is in your hand. The man is dead. And then the whole movie is around that, revolving around that story. So this is what the Mayavadis do. They murder our innocent faith, our innocent natural attraction to Krishna. They kill it. They destroy it. And if you get angry, we are not saying, see, Bhagavad Gita is saying. They put the Bhagavad Gita in front. So Bhagavad Gita is held responsible for this propaganda that ultimately there is no God. God has no form. So we should be careful and we should read Bhagavad Gita systematically. Krishna says, Mogasha, Moga Karmana, Moga Jnana Vishesha. Foolish people who describe a personal form, their hopes will be baffled, they will be destroyed, they will get demoniac life. So we should not dismiss the personal aspect of Krishna. We should in fact take shelter of Krishna's personal form. So this is the first aspect we discussed, that how God is a person and God is a personal wonderful form. And God is supremely great. He is a supreme controller and supreme creator. However, while Bhagavad Gita firmly establishes God or Krishna is a person, Srimad Bhagavatam goes one step further. Srimad Bhagavatam reveals that not only God is great, but God is also very sweet. The sweetness aspect of Krishna is revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam describes how not only Krishna is a person, but devotees who treat Krishna as a person and who love him, how Krishna reciprocates with them. How Krishna has a very dynamic relationship and how Krishna is, God is not some static person. God is a dynamic person, full of emotions and full of rasa, full of relationships. Generally, we think God means somebody is always smiling and peaceful, standing. When we were young, we grew up watching Ramayana serial. And Ramayana, that character who played Ram, Mr. Arun Govil, he would always be smiling. No expression on his face. Sita is kidnapped also, he was very equipoised. I remember asking my father, how can he be so equipoised? God, he's God. God means, you know, there is this concept in our mind, God means no emotions, no action. Actually, Bhagavatam reveals, God is dynamic. Lot of rasa. God is personal. God is sensitive. He can be diplomatic. And as Krishna is a great lover, is a warrior. In other words, Krishna is most complete. Most complete, most attractive. Actually, one atheistic German philosopher, Nietzsche, he was atheist. But he made one statement before dying, you know. Like just a few years before he died, he actually made this statement. He said, I can believe in God, in that God who could dance. If God can dance, then I can believe that. Because God has to be somebody who is enjoying, who is happy, and I can believe in a dancing God. Because at that time, during his time, God was a frozen entity, you know, static, frozen, unsociable, some light causing fear and terror in everybody's heart. And therefore, his disillusionment is understandable. We can understand why he must have been disillusioned with religion and God. But if you had heard about Krishna, I'm sure you would have been pleasantly surprised. Because Krishna dances with spellbinding expertise on the hoods of Kaliya. He dances so amazingly to the tunes of his mother to get some more butter. He dances with the gopis in Ras Leela. So Krishna is full of sweetness. Our Burijan Prabhu gave a very striking example in Christian chapels, in churches in Europe. They have painting of God because they don't know who is God. They have some light coming and, you know, and that is called as God. And everybody is afraid of that light and everybody is standing like this in fear of that. And that is a painting of God's painting. So Burujan Prabhu contrasted that with Hare Krishna movement. He said, in our religion, God steals butter and Mother Yashoda is chasing him and wants to bind him, and Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, is afraid of his mother and he is going like this. You know, we have this painting also here, Damodar Leela painting on that door. So Krishna is afraid of his mother, and in all the other religions, God is the one who causes fear. God is great. But actually God is sweet, so sweet that by his own yoga maya potency, he is covered. And we can see in the whole Bhagavatam, right? First canto we can see, we can take an example of Krishna's sweetness manifesting in the pastime of Bhishma Pitama. Bhishma Dev was a great warrior, fighter. So you can imagine, Krishna is so sweet that he can have relationship with even fighters, you know. And we may think God means, you know, somebody who is very humble and very gentle, God will have a relationship with him. No, somebody loves Krishna and he could be a warrior. Bhishma Pitama was a warrior and Krishna enjoy fighting rasa with him. And when Bhishma Dev fought for the Kauravas and the huge battlefield and the huge battle took place and finally Bhishma was dying, when he was lying on his deathbed, Krishna came with all the Pandavas. Krishna, he orchestrated a drama in such a way that he could not convince Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir was lamenting that I am responsible for the war. And Krishna is not able to convince him because Krishna wanted his devotee Bhishma Dev to get glorified. So let us all go to Bhishma Dev. He will convince you. So all of them come and Bhishma convinces Yudhishthir. And Krishna is just standing and watching Bhishma because Bhishma is about to leave his body. And Bhishma Dev is overwhelmed with gratitude. He feels very grateful that Krishna is so sweet, he's so kind that I am dying and Krishna is coming just to give me darshan. Sadeva devo bhagavan pratikshitam kalevaram yavadidam inomyaham prasanna hasa runalochano lasan mukham bhuja dhyana chataspaturbhuja mukham bhuja. Bhishma Dev is saying, oh my dear Krishna, you are pratikshitam, you are waiting for me to leave my body, you are just standing. He is overwhelmed with gratitude. Prasanna hasa runalochano lasan. Just look at Krishna's spellbinding beauty. Krishna is smiling and his eyes are like the rising sun. They are red like the rising sun. And he is constantly smiling at Bhishma Pitama. So Bhishma Pitama is struck by this beauty of Krishna. Krishna's eyes are compared to, they are reddish, not like the afternoon sun, like the early morning sunrise sun, you know. So soft radiance is there in his eyes. And Krishna's eyes are also described in Bhagavatam many places, Ambujaksha. Ambujaksha means Krishna's eyes are reddish like the lotus flower. And many times other people's eyes are described when they are angry or something. When they are angry, their eyes are described as Tamraksha. Tamraksha means red like copper. But when Krishna gets angry, he is described as Ambujaksha, red like lotus. So like that. So Bhishma Pitama is seeing this beautiful form of Krishna and he becomes more overwhelmed. Tadopasmritya gira sahasranir vimukta sangam mana adi purushe krishne lasat pita pate chaturbhuje purastite melita drigvadharayat. Now what does he do? Tadopasmritya gira sahasranir. Such a great warrior, Bhishma Pitama, who has fought hundreds of battles, who has spoken on hundreds of subjects. What is he doing now at the final moment? Vimukta sangam. He has withdrawn his mind from everything else. And what is he now doing? Mana adi purushe. He is fixing his mind only on Krishna. Krishna lasat pita pate chaturbhuje. Krishna is wearing dazzling yellow garments, shining, and he's just drinking the nectar of Krishna's beauty at the last moment. And as he's seeing this Krishna's form, what happens to him? Vishuddhaya dharanaya atha shubhas tadikshya vaso gata yudashrama. He's seeing Krishna's beautiful form and all the fatigue that he's experienced in the war and throughout his life, all that fatigue drowns away. It dissolves and he becomes extremely happy. He experiences relief from the pangs of material suffering. Of course, he is already absorbed in Krishna, but to teach us, this aspect of Krishna is revealed. That if you meditate on Krishna's personal form and worship Krishna's vigraha, archa vigraha, meditate on Krishna's form, render deity worship, then we can experience relief from all the intense, stressful life that we go through throughout the week in our jobs and colleges. Relief from fatigue. We can imagine in our conditioned state right now also we experience so much joy with all the problems that we have. I remember once we went to Mayapur Yatra. A few brahmacharis went. And we went in summer, peak summer. And after Nagpur, it gets really hot. And the train was late and morning we reached. Then the local trains we had to take. It was really hot. And summer we reached Navadvip. Then we took a boat and then Hulur Ghat. We walked down. Somehow we reached and it was almost 41-42 hour journey. Exhausted. We had no strength in the body, completely dehydrated. But somehow we took bath and entered the temple hall. Saw Rashi Shri Radha Madhav, Panchatattva, Narsingdev. After seeing the deity, everybody unanimously felt a refreshing experience. Isn't it? All of us go through this. Refreshing as if gone coming to a new world. So the point to understand is, with all the lust we have in our heart, with all the anarthas, and we are struggling so much in devotional service, and despite all the struggles, we experience so much joy in Krishna consciousness so many times. We like kirtans, we like prasad, no doubt about that one. Prasad is all-time favorite. Then so many aspects of Krishna consciousness we love, we enjoy. Just imagine if at this stage we are able to appreciate so many aspects of Krishna consciousness, if we actually get purified, when we actually start liking, when we actually start getting spiritual taste, what ananda, what pleasure is waiting to be unearthed and plundered by the soul? We can't even imagine. This is the power of Krishna consciousness. This is the power of accepting God as a person and rendering personal service. And Bhishma Dev is now only meditating on Krishna's personal form. He's seeing how Krishna is remembering. You know, he's lying on the bed. He's about to give up his body and he's remembering. Oh, Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna and his hair turned ashen color because of the dust raised by the hooves of the horses. And he's remembering Krishna's beautiful tamal tree complexion. The complexion of, you know, dark monsoon cloud complexion. And he's remembering Krishna's face decorated with beautiful sandalwood pulp. And Krishna, while driving the horses, was sweating. And those sweat drops were appearing like pearl beads, you know, falling. And of Bhishma had shot arrow at Krishna. There was fighting going on. And there were blood coming out. There were wounds. But that was actually adding to Krishna's beauty. Srila Prabhupada writes amazing purports. You can read Bhagavatam first canto. Srila Prabhupada often said, my purports are my devotional ecstasies. You'll get a glimpse of that when you see Prabhupada analyzing Bhishma Dev's love for Krishna and Krishna's love for Bhishma Dev. Prabhupada writes there, actually Krishna shot arrow, Bhishma shot arrow at Krishna and they were bleeding. It was actually love bites. It was not anger arrows. And Prabhupada writes many things. He says, Bhishma Dev was shooting arrow and we may think, how can he shoot arrow at Krishna? Prabhupada writes, Krishna was enjoying that. Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna was enjoying the same pleasure from Bhishma Dev's arrows as some other devotees may throw flower petals at Krishna. Like during Pushyabhishek, we throw flower petals. So Krishna derives pleasure. For the same pleasure Krishna was deriving when Bhishma was shooting arrows. That's how wonderful and sweet Krishna is. And then Krishna gets up out of the chariot out of anger and he wants to kill Bhishma Dev. He picks up a chariot wheel and he says, I will kill Bhishma. He runs to kill Bhishma Dev. And Arjuna comes, Krishna, no, stop. You have taken a vow not to lift weapon. And Krishna says, no, I will kill Bhishma. So he is running and Prabhupada writes there, Krishna was running to kill Bhishma as if a lover is running towards his beloved. Generally, you would think some action killing is going to take place. No, but that is a love. Actually, Srila Prabhupada reveals how Bhishma Dev was more fortunate than Arjuna. Because this beauty of Krishna, this form of Krishna, as a chariot driver, Arjuna could not see that because he was behind Krishna fighting. But Bhishma Dev is more fortunate because he could see that constantly for the first 11 days of the war. Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he gave many classes on this. And I remember his title would be, Bhishma section, whenever he speaks, he says it is Ras Leela on battlefield. He has given it a title like that. Because it's so sweet. Krishna is relishing rasa with the warrior also, fighter also. And actually, if Krishna hated Bhishma Dev, if Krishna was actually enemy of Bhishma, then when Bhishma Dev is dying, Krishna would not have come. And secondly, if he really hated Bhishma Dev, he would have killed Bhishma. He didn't have to run with the chariot. He could have sat there and moved his Sudarshan Chakra, like he killed Shishupal, you know. Or Krishna is there in the heart of Bhishma as heart, you know, Paramatma. He could have given him a heart attack. Finish. No, Krishna didn't want to actually kill Bhishma Dev. He wanted to enjoy. So that's why he runs and he fights. And so this is amazing how Krishna reciprocates. Krishna is full of sweetness. So Bhagavatam reveals this. Actually, if you see in ISKCON, Krishna reciprocates not just with devotees, sometimes even with those who are little demoniac. But if devotees pray for them, and they also experience Krishna's personal aspect and personal presence. Like one Mataji, very nice devotee, yesterday we heard this story from her. She was revealing in His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj's Vyas Puja celebration. How she loved devotees. Actually, she used to meet Prabhupada every day. She was a young girl. And then she became a teenager. She got initiation and finally. But she got married and her husband was completely unfavorable. And he actually hated ISKCON. But she was getting attached to devotees, Giriraj Maharaj and all the other devotees. And he would not allow any devotee to come home. So one day she planned in such a way that her husband was going out station for some business trip. So he was going at 4 o'clock. So she arranged a big program at 5 o'clock in the evening. For 1 week she was planning through phone call and this. So 5 o'clock all the devotees come. So at 4 o'clock this Prabhuji, this man left home on his business trip. And meanwhile Giriraj Maharaj left from the temple in his car. And the devotees also were leaving. They were all coming. But what happened that day, this man, his train, he missed his train. So he came back home and he's seeing a lot of decorations are going on. What is happening? He said, sheepishly said, what to do? You know, we have arranged a program. I'm sorry. So you'll get a lot of mercy today. Today, you know, Giriraj Swami Maharaj is coming. Guru Maharaj is coming. It's so nice. And he got, no, I don't want anything to do with ISKCON. You people are, and she just started blaspheming. But she just prayed and then finally Giriraj Maharaj came. So she thought her husband should get mercy. So she gave him the garland. She said, you put garland on Maharaj. So he took the garland and threw it at her. If I don't want anything to do with you and ISKCON. And Mara saw that. And she felt very embarrassed. And he walked upstairs. Then Maharaj came. But Maharaj is very simple. You know, he just came, sat down, led Radha Madhav. Devotees were sitting, kirtan, class. She served very nice prasad. Then they were leaving. So she thought again, her husband should get some mercy. So she wanted to give donation to Maharaj. She got an envelope, put some donation. And she told her husband, give it to Maharaj. You know, you'll get some mercy. And he threw it at her. He said, I don't want anything to do with you and ISKCON. And again, Giriraj Maharaj didn't say anything. Quietly, they left. She was very sad. She intensely prayed to Krishna. She prayed to Sri Shraddha Ras Bihariji that please change the heart of my husband. And then finally, Maharaj came back. Devotees came back. And now this man, he was not a devotee, but he wanted to go to Sabarimalai to take darshan of Ayyappa. Not for religious purpose, but for trekking and for enjoying. But there is a rule, you know, if you want to go to Ayyappa, Sabarimala, you have to first go to Guruvayur, which is Krishna temple in Kerala. So as a ritual, he had to go there because that is a custom. So when he went to Guruvayur for darshan, and he was taking darshan, and he looked up, and he saw, he was completely started shivering because Guruvayur had big, his eyes had become, Krishna's eyes had become very big and red with anger. And Krishna was looking very angrily at him. And he was shocked, he was shivering. Then he went back. Next day again he came and took darshan. Again Guruvayur appeared completely different than what he had seen in paintings and photographs. Guruvayur was standing angry. You know, why are you behaving like this towards my devotee? That's what he concluded. Very angry form of Guruvayur. He started shivering and instead of going to Sabarimalai, he came back to Bombay and came to his wife. Now his ego didn't allow him to apologize to his wife. He just told her, I want to meet your Maharaj. Take me. So she brought him to Giriraj Swami Maharaj and he saw Maharaj and he went close to him and fell down at his feet and begged forgiveness. If I have offended you, I started crying. And then he told the whole story. Maharaj said, no, you are not offended. You are so fortunate. I have never seen Krishna of this form. But you got to see this form of Krishna. Krishna is so merciful to you. You are the most fortunate recipient of Krishna's mercy. So he became, you know, he was glorified for that. And he went on to become a wonderful devotee. So he became fixed up devotee. So you can see how when Baldev Prabhu told this story yesterday, I was thinking, wow, how Krishna is so personal. And just because devotees prayed intensely, Krishna reciprocated. Of course, somebody may say Bhishma Dev is a pure devotee, and we are talking about this Mataji, she is also a devotee. What about impersonalists themselves? Can they be attracted by Krishna's form? Can they also get mercy of Krishna? Srimad Bhagavatam reveals another interesting story about the four Kumaras. They were completely Brahman realized. They were actually meditating on the impersonal aspect of the Supreme Lord. They were great yogis, but by their power, they had decided not to grow older. So they remained as young five-year-old boys because they didn't want all the complications that come with grown-up age. They didn't want all that. So they just wanted to remain young and pure and innocent. So they did intense tapasya, intense meditation on impersonal Brahman. They heard from their father. Now they wanted to also understand Lord Vishnu. And with their great penance, they came to Vaikunthapuri, the abode of Lord Vishnu. And these four Kumaras, though they were Brahman realized, they had three very important qualities. They were sincere, humble and grateful. These three qualities they had. Srila Prabhupada reveals this in the purport. So if these three qualities are there, then we can get, there is some hope in understanding Krishna. So these four Kumaras came to the gate of Vaikuntha. They passed through the six gates. Finally they came to the seventh gate, where Jay and Vijay, the gatekeepers, are standing. And these gatekeepers are also beautiful. In Vaikuntha, everybody is beautiful. It's extraordinarily, exquisitely beautiful. So these two gatekeepers are standing, and they saw these four children, babies, you know, small boys are coming inside, and they want to enter Vaikuntha. They didn't like it, so they just stopped them. Their arched eyebrows, they were agitated, and they stopped the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras are not ordinary people. They were great self-realized sages. They were outraged by this astonishing act that we have been stopped by these two gatekeepers. We have come to see Lord Vishnu. They were liberated. Now Prabhupada writes, they were liberated. In the previous verse it is mentioned they were liberated. And in this verse it is mentioned they got angry. How can somebody who is liberated be angry? This proves that even at the stage of liberation there can be emotions like anger. So they were angry. They were not angry because of personal problem. It's not that their sense gratification is impeded, that's why they're angry. It is they were so eager to see Krishna. They were so eager to see Lord Vishnu. And because of that eagerness, they got angry. And they knew that Lord Vishnu is Surtama, is the best of friends. And now they're not getting a chance to see the Lord. So out of that, they got angry. And they cursed the two gatekeepers. Now why I'm saying this pastime? Please hear this attentively. This pastime reveals another aspect of Krishna. We discussed how Krishna is great, Krishna is a person, Krishna is sweet. Here, how Krishna is very expert in conflict resolution. Krishna is expert in, you know, making everybody happy. And Krishna, how Krishna arranges events, how he deals with situations, we can see that also. So the four Kumaras were stopped, they were angry, they cursed, they said, who are these two people, imposters with a discordant mentality? In Vaikuntha, there is no room for envy. No unqualified person enters. So why are they trying to behave like this? And they are not in harmony with the Lord's wishes. So they should go to material world, because material world is a place of duality. Like this, they curse. Prabhupada writes that it's a very important point. The point that they are mentioning about harmony not being there. He says, Prabhupada writes a very instructive statement for all of us. He says, if members of ISKCON put faith in Krishna as center and they consider Guru's instructions as their life's goal, then we will all be in harmony. There will be a harmonious situation. So here, four Kumaras perceive that Jay and Vijay are stopping us very unreasonably, for they curse them that you go to material world. Now, Lord Vishnu comes to know. He is inside. Meanwhile, Jay Vijay, they are devotees. They realize their mistake. So what do they do? What does a devotee do when he realizes he's made a mistake? they fall and grasp the feet of the four Kumaras and they beg for forgiveness. This is a very important lesson to learn. That whenever devotees make mistakes, it's not that devotees, he who doesn't make mistake. Devotees will make mistakes. But what is our attitude? Attitude is sincere forgiveness and wanting to improve. So they beg forgiveness. They didn't justify their offense. Very important point. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that whenever we do Vaishnava Aparadh, if at all we do, and then the solution is, our devotee should cry piteously and beg for forgiveness. So let us say you don't have a good relationship with some devotee and you offended him. And then you realize, arey, offend ho gaya. You know, but then I don't have such a relationship that I can go and beg forgiveness from him. So what are the different things we could do to patch up? Maybe we could send an email or do some service to him. All these things we could do. But actually scripture says, sorry, this is not the actual solution. The actual solution is you have to go to that Vaishnava and beg forgiveness. There is no substitute for begging forgiveness from a devotee for committing an offense or a mistake. So Jai Vijay did not believe in indirect something. So they just honestly approached, fell at the feet, begged for forgiveness. And on top of that, they also told the four Kumaras, taking a very humble position, that you have perfectly punished us. We deserve to be punished because we didn't recognize you. We have done a big blunder. But we beg you, please be compassionate on us. Please be compassionate and please bless us that we may never forget the Lord. So look at this, very interesting. This whole pastime is revealing to us how a devotee's consciousness should be. He's accepting the punishment, but what a devotee doesn't want? He doesn't want to forget the Lord. He doesn't mind suffering. Actually, this is the difference between a materialistic person and a devotee. Materialistic person fears death. And devotee fears forgetfulness of Krishna. Very important difference between devotees and materialists. Because devotee feels what? Death is okay. If I die, I may go back to Krishna. But if I forget Krishna, very disastrous. Because if you forget Krishna, then we get animal life, plant life. Then the consciousness is covered. You know, as human beings, sometimes we think human life is so nice. Look at this plant life, dog life, so horrible. But if the dog, if you were to ask a dog and if the dog could speak, the dog would think that life is excellent. That forgetfulness, Krishna's prakshepatmika shakti and avaranatmika shakti are so strong that we will never be able to surrender to Krishna if we cannot surrender in human life. The consciousness is so covered. That's why devotee never wants to forget Krishna. He is always praying, Krishna, let me never forget you. There was one bogus guru. But he also had mystic power. But he did a lot of nonsense in his whole life. So he was dying. He knew that he was going to be born as a hog in the next life. So he told his disciple, disciple, I'm going to die. But because of my pap, I'll be born as a pig. You see that gutter outside the window? I'll be born as one of the pigs there. So as soon as I'm born there, you take that sword and kill me. So this disciple said, yes, okay, Gurudev, whatever you say. For this bogus guru, eventually, he died. And the disciple took that sword, went to the gutter, waited for that piglet to come out. And after some days, sure enough, his guru was reborn as one of the children of the pig. So as the piglet came out, immediately the piglet started swimming in that stool, urine and the waste of the gutter and enjoying. And he said, now I should fulfill the order of my guru. He took that sword and was about to kill that piglet and he heard a voice. Stop! Don't kill me. And he said, Are, where is this voice coming from? It's a familiar voice. Then he saw the piglet was speaking. Don't kill me, I am your guru, don't kill me. He said, but Gurudev, you told me that I should kill you if you are born as a pig. So this piglet said, yeah, I told you. But at that time I didn't realize how glorious this life is. That time I didn't know that this pig life is so nice. Such nice stool and such nice urine. So this is material life. Forgetfulness of Krishna, so deep rooted. So now we have a chance as human beings to get connected to Krishna, to get connected to devotees, practice chanting. So this is the situation. Four Kumaras are trying to enter and see Lord. The gatekeepers have stopped. They curse, and the gatekeepers Jay and Vijay also beg forgiveness. And this time, Lord Vishnu learns of the insult and he comes running with this Lakshmiji. And when he comes outside, the four Kumaras, for the first time, they are seeing this most wondrous form of the Lord. The detailed description is given about the Lord's beauty. You can read the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Amazing description. And four Kumaras see this form and they enter into an ecstatic trance. They are spellbound. And the Lord is not only exquisitely beautiful, he has two people next to him doing chamara seva. And these chamaras, you know, they appear to be like two swans next to the Lord. And there is a beautiful umbrella somebody is keeping on the Lord's, above Lord's head. And there is beautiful necklaces on that umbrella, which appears to be like some pearls kept. And Lord has a beautiful blackish complexion. And this beautiful white swan-shaped chamar and this pearl necklaces on the umbrella. It appears as if some ice is melting on a mountain. Or some nectar drop is falling from the full moon. That's how exquisitely beautiful that whole sight was for the four Kumaras. So in that great joy, they start shivering in ecstasy. And what does Lord Vishnu do? He has come because he has heard that his two gatekeepers have been cursed and four Kumaras are also nice devotees. They want to come and take my darshan and these are also nice devotees. Some misunderstanding. And so he wants to resolve this and he comes and he sees four Kumaras are seeing and he gives them a big smile, affectionate smile. And a loving glance upon them. So that is when the four Kumaras, they are able to realize that what a beautiful sight this is. How foolish we were that we were attached to the impersonal understanding. And Lord Vishnu is having beautiful garland. Lord Vishnu's garland is always, there are bees swarming over that. And he has beautiful necklaces and beautiful bracelets. And he has one hand on the Garuda. On the other hand, Lord Vishnu is twirling a lotus flower. And his cheeks are shining, effulgent. And with that effulgence reflects on Lord Vishnu's alligator-shaped pendants. So, and that reflects back. And that pendant is also very, very dazzling. For the combined light, it shames even lightning. Lightning pales in front of the Lord's beauty. And Lord has a prominent nose. Sunasam Subruvam Charu Kapolam Surasundaram Tarunam Ramani Yangam Arunoste Kshanadaram Pranata Shayanam Ramnam Sharanyam Karunaranavam. He is fully youthful. His all limbs and senses are transcendentally attractive. And his pride defeats the beauty of Lakshmiji. And in this great wonderful sight, the four Kumaras spontaneously they fall down and they offer full dandavat to Lord Vishnu. So when they offer dandavat, they get a fragrance of the tulsi leaf that is decorating the Lord's lotus feet. They start smelling that. Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda Kinjal Kamishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Antargatasva Vivarena Chakarate Sham Sankshobha Makshara Jusham Apichitta Tanvo. What happened? They saw the Lord's beautiful lotus eyes. They paid obeisances. Kinjalka Mishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu. The Vayu, the wind blew and carried the dust of the Lord's lotus feet mixed with the tulsi, and that fragrance Antar Gatasva Vivarena Chakara Tesham, that entered the nostrils of the four Kumaras, and they were intoxicated by a spiritual ecstasy. And Sankshobham, this is a very important key word, they were kind of agitated. In the sense, they went through a change. This is when they went through that change of their attachment to impersonal conception that they abandoned. And this experience made them change, come out of that, because they were attached to the Akshara Jusham, the impersonal aspect. And that agitation or that struggle, they broke. And now they got completely attached to Lord Vishnu. So Krishna consciousness or Lord's beauty or Lord's association of the Lord, the process of chanting Hare Krishna, this process can disturb or agitate and potentially break us from our past conditionings and past conceptions about truth and get us attached to the Lord's personal aspect, the sweetness aspect. These four Kumaras went through this. Sankshobam, Akshara Jusham. Not just the Lord, even the Lord's devotees, pure devotees, when you come in contact with them, we go through this. A devotee goes through this, if he's sincere. Srila Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur was a very powerful preacher, and one great impersonalist, Mayavadi scholar, came to meet him. But again, this Mayavadi scholar was sincere at heart. He had a desire to know the truth. But he was also proud and arrogant. So he came and he defeated all the brahmacharis in the temple. And he knew all the shlokas left. He was a professor in Allahabad University, very learned man. He had written books on Shankara's philosophy. And the brahmacharis said, why don't you meet Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada? So he agreed to challenge. And he said, tomorrow morning I'll challenge him. So he sat in the audience. And Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur gave a forceful presentation on Krishna's beauty, Krishna as a person. And this man was hearing. And then Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur said, any questions? So this man, and all the devotees looked at him because he was the one, you know, this was the moment they were waiting for. But to their great surprise, this man just sat like this. We didn't say a word. So after the program, the brahmacharis asked him, why you didn't challenge? Why you didn't ask questions? So he said, I wanted to, but I went blank. Tomorrow I'll write the questions and I'll come. So next day again, Bhaktivedanta Thakur gave class. He had questions written and he kept it in front. And after the class, any questions? And this time again he was quiet. He didn't say anything. So the devotees asked him later, why you didn't challenge? You had so many questions. He said, yesterday I went blank. Today I couldn't see the questions. I went blind. I don't know what is happening. He is giving such powerful talks. Tomorrow I am going to ask my questions. The third day finally he was sitting. And devotees said, we'll help him. You know, they were sitting next to him. They read the questions. We'll read the questions. Whatever. Because they wanted the answers. So he was sitting and the class got over and Bhaktivedanta Thakur said, any questions? And devotees looked at him and they were shocked. This man was sitting and he had tears in his eyes. And he got up, he went to Bhaktivedanta Thakur, paid full dandavat and begged forgiveness. Because Bhaktivedanta Thakur spoke about Krishna as a person, how absolute truth is a person and how we should be attracted by the personal aspect of Krishna. And he broke down. And eventually, he went on to become one of the stalwart devotees in Gaudiya Math. He wrote extensive commentaries on Shikshashtakam verses of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he even took sannyas from Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur. He went on to become His Holiness Srila Adikeshav Swami. One of the most prominent sannyasis in Gaudiya Math. So this is the power of a pure devotee. So he went through that agitation. He had to go through that change of attachment to the impersonal aspect. And in India, this is what we are brainwashed since childhood. If spirituality means God has no form. The one, ek tui nirakar, you know, he is formless. Formless aspect is one of the energies of Krishna. We don't deny it. That nirakar aspect is the Brahman aspect. That is Krishna, definitely. But there is more to it. Krishna also has a form. So this struggle, he went through, Adikesha Swami went through. And he surrendered to Krishna. Even during Srila Prabhupada's time in San Francisco, in New York, one girl was coming for Prabhupada's class. Her name was Joy. Young girl, 19, 20-year-old girl, and she was attached to the impersonal understanding. And here Prabhupada would only speak about Krishna. So she was struggling and she was thinking, what is right? What is correct? You know? What is the correct understanding? She wanted to surrender to Krishna, but the Mayavad influence is so contaminating. It doesn't go out so easily. So she was thinking, what should I do? What should I do? And suddenly, to her surprise, another lady who was coming for the program, she started shouting and blaspheming Srila Prabhupada. Now, this lady was a Hatha Yogini, very famous yoga teacher. And she said, ultimately, God is formless. This Swami is cheating. Everybody is God. Don't bow down to this Swami. Everybody is God. Don't bow down to this Swami. So everybody was shocked. And this girl already, she was not sure. And now she is hearing this propaganda. And Prabhupada coolly said, if everybody is God, then I am also God. Then you should bow down to me. She had no answer to that. Prabhupada's amazing, you know, presence of mind. Of course, Prabhupada never said he is God. The point was, he was trying to outwit her. He outwitted her completely. But then this lady was very, very arrogant and she was shouting. For this young girl, innocent girl, Joy, her dormant love for Krishna, which is potentially there in all of us, to love Krishna, to want to offer our hearts to Krishna, but that is being crushed. For this other lady was crushing it. For this lady, this girl thought, I should not surrender to Krishna, I should go back home. She was going. She was leaving the temple. And that time, Prabhupada was also leaving to go for another program. And all devotees are standing. And this lady was shouting, the other lady, the Hatha Yogini. So Prabhupada, before going out, he looked at this Hatha Yogini with such fiery anger in his eyes. He just stared at her. And by his anger, this lady was like a statue. She just couldn't open her mouth. She just kept quiet. And she kept quiet, and this young girl, Joy, was watching the whole incident, that Prabhupada is looking at her angrily. So she looked at the whole incident. She got scared, you know, because she was already struggling and she was confused. And in that struggle and confusion, she started crying. She broke down and she fell at Prabhupada's feet. And everybody is watching this incident. She said, Prabhupada, I'm sorry. I'm confused about what is right. And she's saying like this, and you are saying like this. She was crying. And Prabhupada patiently allowed her to cry. And then Prabhupada told her, never associate with non-devotees. Saying like this, Prabhupada left. Next day morning when Prabhupada came, again Joy, she came. And Prabhupada spent with her one full hour talking about only Krishna as a person, Krishna's beauty. And Krishna, how Krishna is most attractive. So this girl heard the whole pastime. And eventually she gave up the association of this Mayavadi. And she went on to become Janva Devi. She became Prabhupada's disciple. She became a very fixed up devotee. So this struggle, we have to go through this struggle of abandoning our lower or previous conditionings, previous conceptions of truth, and accept a higher and more complete aspect of absolute truth. If you read the book Journey Home, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj also highlights this in his first meeting with Srila Prabhupada. He says how pure devotee is like a spotless mirror, and you come in front of the mirror, what happens? He writes that when you come in the association of a pure devotee, you can see both the beauty and the ugliness of your inner life. You know, that is churning, that is exposure. We get exposed to ourselves. So Maharaj writes there that the beauty and the ugliness of my inner life was exposed to me. My virtues and my sins were exposed. You come face to face with our strengths and our weaknesses, our faith and our doubts. So therefore Maharaj says that association of Prabhupada was both a joyful experience and a painful experience. He went through that struggle and then he offered his heart to Srila Prabhupada. So therefore, accepting Krishna as a person and offering our hearts to him through the how do we accept all this? What is the practical way of doing it? By accepting the process, that is by chanting Hare Krishna, coming in the association. So this is what we are supposed to be doing. And this is what the four Kumaras did. They experienced this, they abandoned, and they surrendered to Lord Vishnu. And again they looked up, and what did they see? They saw Lord's face is as beautiful as the inside of a blue lotus. And the Lord is smiling, and that smile was as captivating as a blossoming jasmine flower. And they were fully satisfied seeing the Lord's form, for they looked down at the Lord's lotus feet, and they saw the Lord's shining nails, which are appearing like rubies. For like this, they were meditating on the Lord's personal form again and again and again. They were drinking the nectar of the Lord's beauty with their eyes constantly. And Srila Prabhupada writes a 6-page purport to this verse, explaining how Krishna is a form, Lord is a person. And there he writes two amazing aspects about the Lord. He says, Lord is there in the heart. Lord is there in the heart as Paramatma, we know. But Prabhupada writes, Lord does two things in the heart as Paramatma. One is, he is a witness. Lord is there in each one of our hearts as a witness. He will punish us, he will reward us, he will give sanction, he will not sanction, he will do all these things. But Lord is also there in the heart as another role, and that is the role of a friend. And he is waiting to see a sincere activity that we do in Krishna consciousness. And he will direct us towards him if we have that sincerity. So we have to understand that Krishna is there in the heart and is a person, and he will direct us to proper devotees and help us surrender to him. So this is very nicely written by Srila Prabhupada in this purport. And you will see in the whole Bhagavatam, Krishna's beauty, Lord Vishnu's beauty is described to lotus flower or jasmine flowers, always compared with very attractive, beautiful flowers. This doesn't mean that the Lord's beauty is restricted to these flowers. Because in material world, we have no conception of something higher. Our conception is some beautiful flower. So the Lord's beauty is described in those terms. That doesn't mean Lord is only as beautiful as a lotus flower. He is much, much more beautiful. But for us to understand, this description is given. And Srila Prabhupada was in Africa once while giving a class, he said, so Krishna is beautiful and black in color. For the African devotees, they were all smiling. Oh, we are black, Krishna is black. Hamari khub jamegi, hum bhi kale hain, Bhagwan bhi kale hain. They were happy, they were smiling. Oh, Krishna is black, we are also black. So Prabhupada saw, Prabhupada could understand that this is what they are thinking. Prabhupada said, Krishna is black, but not like you. His black is different black. So when we hear Kunti Devi saying, Krishna, you are beautiful, your navel is beautiful like a lotus flower. Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, Namo Pankaja Maline, Namo Pankaja Netraya, Namaste Pankajangre, Pankaja. Your beautiful navel is like a lotus flower, your garland, you have a garland of lotus flowers, your limbs are like lotus. That means, that doesn't mean that it's only as beautiful as a lotus. It's much, much more. But unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, we have been brainwashed and bombarded with so many sensual beauty and attraction that we have no attraction for Krishna. So we have to do sadhana bhakti, we have to practice, we have to chant. People don't want to get attracted to Krishna. They prefer imitating gods, or they prefer all bogus people, and they'll accept such ugly looking people as God. But they will refuse to come and surrender to Krishna. One of our book distributors met one man in the street while distributing books recently. And this man said, no, I don't worship Krishna. Krishna is incarnated. He is there in Bombay. He has come now. So this devotee asked, where is he? He said, he is living in Ghatkopar, slums of Ghatkopar. Lord Vishnu has incarnated, latest news. He is in the slums of Ghatkopar. And saying this, this man showed a photograph, you know, of this Vishnu's incarnation. So our devotee saw and he was shocked. This man was so ugly looking, you know. And he's supposed to be incarnation of Vishnu. And this devotee was later telling me that such a ugly, he was more ugly than that Vishnu was appeared, you know, very close by, near Dadar also, somebody has come. So it's more ugly than that also. But this is the problem. We are attracted by imitation gods. We are attracted by everything other than Krishna or Vishnu. Even if Krishna comes now, people will not accept. Because that bhakti, that love has been killed. Like Krishna was there in front of Duryodhan, but Duryodhan could not recognize Krishna. That's why devotees, they don't pray for seeing Krishna. We should pray for getting bhakti first. Because if we have bhakti, we can see Krishna. If we only want to see Krishna, then even if Krishna comes, we will not be able to see. We will prefer some imitators. Like when Mr. Charlie Chaplin, one of the greatest comedians, he saw a newspaper advertisement saying that Charlie Chaplin look-alike contest in Monte Carlo, USA. That time Charlie Chaplin was famous and he was active. So he said, wow, they are having a contest, look-alike, my look-alike contest. So it was amusing. So he went to that contest. He said, let me check out what they are doing. So there were hundreds of people there, all dressed like Charlie Chaplin, you know. That was a Charlie Chaplin fancy dress competition. For the original, real Charlie Chaplin was also there. And he also took part in the contest. And guess what? He didn't win the contest. He didn't even come second. So finally they called him, you know, they gave him a consolation prize. Well tried. You acted nicely like that. But I am the original. The imitators are much better than him. This is our material world. You know, imitation jewelry is more attractive than real jewelry also. But the four Kumaras were not to be mistaken like this. They accepted the Lord's personal form. They surrendered and then they offer beautiful prayers to the Lord's personal form. They say, my dear Lord, we don't deserve to see this form of yours. We are bogus people. We are impersonalists. But you are so merciful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. They constantly express gratitude and then they tell the Lord, oh Lord, please let us go to hellish condition because we have cursed two innocent people. Such nice servants you have, Jay and Vijay. And very foolishly we cursed. We have been very proud. Please punish us. We are very unfortunate. Saying like this, thanking and apologizing simultaneously, they offered prayers. So, see, very nice situation. Both parties are accepting mistake. And Lord Vishnu's reply is most stunning. Lord Vishnu tells the four Kumaras, I am sorry, my servants have ignored you. Actually, devotees are highest. I beg forgiveness on behalf of what my servants did. It's amazing. Lord takes responsibility. See, all parties are accepting responsibility in this pastime for the mistake. You know, four Kumaras are saying, we are wrong. Jai Vijay, no, we are wrong. And Lord Vishnu says, no, I am wrong. And Lord Vishnu says, if a servant does any mistake, the master has to be blamed. So, I am their master, so it is my fault. Because even if a dog eater chants once my name, he is purified and you are such great Vaishnavas and you are most advanced and you have been offended, I will lop off my own arm if the conduct of my arm is found hostile towards you. Chindyat svabhavum pratikula vrittim. I don't mind cutting off my own arm, Lord Vishnu is telling the four Kumaras, because I cannot see that you have been offended. People say my lotus feet are very sacred, but they are sacred because the pure devotees are worshipping. It is because of the power of pure devotees that my lotus feet, my feet are so worshipable. Lakshmiji never wants to leave me, but I get my strength from devotees. I am purchased by my devotees. It's amazing. Huh? Lord Vishnu is openly declaring that his devotees have purchased him. This is Krishna's, the Lord's humility. If somebody is favored little by Lakshmi, we get so impressed by that person. If Mr. Bill Gates comes to Bombay, whole country goes gaga over it. Oh, Bill Gates. Who is Bill Gates? He is favored little by Lakshmiji. Isn't it? Imagine somebody favored unlimitedly by Lakshmiji. And imagine somebody is favored unlimitedly by unlimited Lakshmijis. And all the unlimited Lakshmijis want to serve Lord Vishnu, but Lord Vishnu says, my devotee, Vaishnava, they have purchased me. So you can see the purchasing power capacity of a devotee. What is a devotee, you know? According to Lord Vishnu, what is the position? So then he says, I don't get so satisfied when I am worshipped with great poetry and great praises. I become more happy when I see my devotees eating nice prasad which is dripping with ghee. I heard haribols for this. Amazing. So then Lord Vishnu says, I take dust from the feet of my devotees. So how can anybody offend my devotees? So like this, Lord Vishnu is directly telling them that you have been offended, I am sorry. But Lord Vishnu is so expert speaker, he ends the whole conversation by saying, and my heart, my dear four Kumaras, my heart is captivated by those who are tolerant and those who don't protest even when they are being cursed. So he is now glorifying Jai Vijay also, because they are also standing right there. It's amazing, isn't it? He's begging forgiveness and then he's appreciating his two servants that they are so nice. They tolerated all this curse. So please be kind to them. And the four Kumaras are struck by this most amazing speech by the Lord. And they tell the Lord that, my dear Lord, you are talking as if we have done a favor to you. But who are we? You are the one. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we have not done any favor to you. How can you be purified by us? You are purifying the whole universe. Please drive away our ignorance and our rajogun. We are most fallen. And you are speaking all these sweet words to us because you want to teach us etiquette. So like this, all of them beg forgiveness. And Lord Vishnu says, actually this was my desire. I request Jai Vijay, please go to material world. I also want to enjoy Viryaras. You know, we will have pastimes. And then, there's another reason why Lord Vishnu arranged this. Because once Lakshmiji was entering Vaikuntha and Jai Vijay had tried to stop her. And Lakshmiji was actually a little upset with both of them. So now Lakshmiji is also pleased in one sense that Lord Vishnu has sent Jai Vijay down. So Lord Vishnu has satisfied all parties in this one event. Very brilliantly, Lord Vishnu handles this situation. So you can read more. If you want to know more, you can read this third canto. The whole chapters are described on this. So like this, there are many pastimes in Bhagavatam, but we'll now conclude our class by understanding this mesmerizing blend of Krishna or the Lord, this blend of greatness and sweetness. So the greatness of the Lord, the magnificence of Godhood, that is one aspect of God which is taught everywhere in all religions. In Hare Krishna, we also understand the sweetness of love of Krishna. That is why Hare Krishna is little different, or it's unique contribution. So every religion talks about God as a judge, you know, who is giving punishment. But Hare Krishna movement also talks about God not only as a judge, but God is also a thief. You know, he is the one who steals. Everything belongs to him, of course, but he steals because he is captivated by the love of his devotees. He steals butter. And what pastimes Krishna orchestrates? He is completely bewildered by the love of his own devotee. It's amazing. Krishna is the supreme controller, but he makes Yoga Maya the director. It's a very unique movie, which has a special twist. Yoga Maya is the director of this play, drama. Krishna is the hero. But Krishna is also the script writer of this whole. So in one sense, Krishna is simultaneously in control and not in control. Because he's in control because he is desire. You know, his story, his script. But then Yoga Maya takes over, and then Krishna, he forgets himself while playing that role. He becomes completely captivated by the love of his devotee. He forgets his position of Godhood. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example that sometimes a bee enters the lotus flower in the evening time to get nectar. And as the bee enters, he gets so busy in getting nectar that the petals close. When the petals close, the bee doesn't realize that the petals have closed and he's been covered, because he's getting so much nectar in that lotus flower. Similarly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna enters the hearts of his devotees who love him so dearly and is experiencing so much nectar in that association with the pure devotee that he doesn't realize that he's being covered. His position of Godhood is being covered by the sweetness of love of his devotees. And by Srila Prabhupada's causeless mercy, we can understand all this. We can read Bhagavatam, we can read Krishna book, we can approach Krishna as a person and relish this sweetness. And all this Mayavad influence the world is propagating, that can be vanquished by taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's books and by the process that Srila Prabhupada has given. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu made a very interesting point. He said when he was a young devotee, he used to always hear Prabhupada smashing Mayavad, and he used to think, why Prabhupada is criticizing Mayavad so much? So he and a few devotees thought, maybe Mayavad is some group in India, Prabhupada has some issues with them, and that's why he was criticizing them. And then he said, but years later we realized that Prabhupada was talking about us. The greatest Mayavadi is within. Our desire to be an enjoyer, our desire to be famous, our desire to be the controller. We all think I am God, everything is revolving around me, everything should be centered around me. This is Mayavad actually. So when you take shelter of Prabhupada and hear about Krishna constantly, the I, the center will shift from I to Krishna. But if the person is demoniac, he doesn't want to offer his heart to Krishna, then Krishna's greatness will hide over his sweetness. Like Duryodhan, for Duryodhan, he was arrogant. So Krishna's greatness was revealed to him. Krishna's sweetness was not revealed. Krishna revealed his universal form. But if somebody is sincerely loving Krishna, then Krishna's sweetness will cover over his greatness. Like Srimati Radharani's pastime, you know, when gopis were having Raslila and Krishna disappeared and gopis were looking for Krishna, Krishna came in the form of Vishnu and he gave directions. But when Radharani came, Krishna could not keep his four-handed form because he saw the intense transcendental anxiety in Srimati Radharani's face, and Srimati Radharani was wanting to be with Krishna so much that Krishna, that four-handed form disappeared, his two extra hands melted away, and he appeared as Krishna. That sweetness came out. So Krishna's greatness is eclipsed when there is love. The sweetness comes up. And just like sweetness of Krishna surpasses greatness of Krishna, similarly Krishna's love surpasses his laws. Krishna has strict laws of karma. Everybody is included within that law. Anything you do good, you get good reaction. Bad, bad reaction. Strict law enforcer. But that law of Krishna takes a backseat when there is love. That's why Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. If you surrender to Krishna, then that goes aside. So like this, both Krishna's greatness and Krishna's sweetness, Krishna's laws and Krishna's love. So we have to approach Krishna in love. There is this famous temple in Karoli, Radha Madan Mohan temple, where we went to Jaipur Yatra a few years back. We went to this place. Beautiful temple. It's on a hilltop. A very instructive event took place there in the year 1868. Some ladies would come every day for Mangalarati and they would do service for the deities, Radha Madan Mohan. They would make garlands, they would cook. There was one lady from the small Gujar community there who would be milking for the Lord. The cows they would be milking and they would be taking care. So this lady was a simple lady who nobody knew. Nobody knew her, but she had so much attraction for Krishna, Madan Mohan, that she would render service. So, and Madan Mohan was captivated and captured by her service that one day she was staying below the hill. So one day Madan Mohan ji actually came to her house. She was shocked. She was in the bed making garlands and suddenly she saw in front of her eyes the Madan Mohan deity whom she's been worshipping and every day serving above the hill. Madan Mohan ji standing in front of her, the same Madan Mohan. She said, "Madan Mohan, you are here." And Madan Mohan, lo and behold, he spoke. He said, "I have come to accept service from you because you're always serving me with so much love. I'm conquered by your love. And now I'm tired. Please massage my feet." Saying like this, Madan Mohan deity came on that. She had a small cot, small bed. And Madan Mohan came and took rest. And she was so overwhelmed. She started massaging Madan Mohan's lotus feet. And in great ecstasy, as she was massaging, because she used to, whole day she was doing service for Krishna. So she was doing service, massaging feet, and then slowly she started also dozing. Just like many times in the classes, we doze. So like that, she was massaging and she dozed. And soon she also fell asleep. And she slept next to Madan Mohan. And the whole night passed. And 4:30, there is Mangalarti above the hill in the temple. And around 4:20, 4:25, Madan Mohan got up. "Oh, it's time for Mangalarti. The pujari will open the altar and he'll see I'm not there." So Madan Mohan got up with a start and he ran. But while running, Madan Mohan ji had come wearing beautiful yellow garments. He had a beautiful yellow chadar and he had kept it on the cot while sleeping. And this lady, she also had a chadar, black, dirty chadar. It was a little cold. And she also was sleeping. So Madan Mohan picked up her chadar and put it on himself and ran and stood on the altar. So the pujari opened the door for the Mangalarti and they did the arati and they saw, what is this, black cloth, dirty cloth. But they didn't say anything. The arati went on. And meanwhile, this lady got up and she every day used to come for Mangalarti. She said, 4:30 Mangalarti. She ran and while running, she picked up Krishna's yellow chadar. She didn't realize. She just picked up, put it on herself and she ran and she came and she was taking darshan and the arati was going on and they finally moved the lamp towards the devotees and everybody saw that yellow dazzling chadar is on this lady. And they said, "You are a thief. How did you get this from the altar?" And everybody surrounded her. But they all knew that she's a sincere lady. She comes every day, does a lot of service. So then she explained her story. And of course, it was believable because she was so pure that to honor this incident, even today, that this incident took place on Amavasya night. So every Amavasya night, they put this black chadar on Lord Madan Mohan as a honor to commemorate Lord's reciprocation of love with this sincere, unassuming devotee. So we are so fortunate, Srila Prabhupada has given us this process where we can approach Krishna as a person. And now we are so, and how we can approach Krishna as a person and understand his greatness and sweetness? Very easy. You don't have to start conjecturing or imagining or concocting something about Krishna. Simply take shelter of the holy name of Krishna. Krishna's holy name has both greatness and sweetness. How does Krishna's holy name have greatness? Krishna's holy name is so great that it can perform that activity which even nuclear bombs cannot. Nuclear bombs can destroy the whole world, but nuclear bombs cannot destroy our lust, envy, greed, pride, our anarthas. And the holy name is so powerful and so great that holy name can destroy all these anarthas. Not only the holy name has this greatness aspect, the holy name is also sweet. so sweet that acharyas want millions of tongues and millions of ears to relish and drink the nectar of the holy name. So we can see that holy name, if we take shelter of it, we can experience so much sweetness and our hearts can become so soft like a butter. And Krishna is known as butter thief. He'll come and steal that heart which is infused with love for Krishna, awakened due to sincere chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram,
Hare. And we are so happy and fortunate that this is our holy name week going on all over the world. There is glorification of holy name this week. Yesterday we had Sankirtan at Mira Road, today at Kargar, and coming Saturday we will be having here at Chowpatti, and then Jhu on the Sunday. So why we are having this Harinam Sankirtan? To glorify Krishna, to reawaken our personal dormant relationship with Krishna. And this Sankirtan is the most powerful form which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, by which all of us can re-establish our relationship with Krishna. And this Sankirtan of Krishna's holy names is so powerful that it can attract people from all classes of life. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced this Nagar Sankirtan, this Harinam Sankirtan, people like Maharaj Pratap Rudra, most sophisticated aristocratic kings, were attracted, and also low class Jagai Madai were also attracted. What a process. It is like it encompasses and attracts everyone. So we are so fortunate that we have been given this holy name. We have been given shelter of Srila Prabhupada's movement, his association of his devotees, his disciples. So let us grab this process and take shelter of Krishna consciousness wholeheartedly. So to conclude, we discussed today about the glorification of Krishna as a person, and how from the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, 9th chapter, 11th chapter, 12th chapter, we can clearly establish that God is a person. And this is the greatness of, all greatness of Krishna springs from this understanding that Krishna is a person. Then we discussed how there is more to Krishna than simply greatness, and this makes ISKCON very unique. Krishna is great and also unlimitedly sweet. And the sweetness we discussed from Srimad Bhagavatam, we discussed Bhishma Pitamah's relationship with Krishna, we discussed the third canto where the four Kumaras deal with Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu deals with them. So like this we can see so many pastimes of Srila Prabhupada also, where he established forcefully and proved that Krishna is a person. And ultimately we can realize this greatness and sweetness of Krishna through sincere chanting of his holy names. So by taking shelter of Krishna's holy name, we can all reawaken our dormant loving relationship with Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We'll stop here. We'll have Kirtan now and then Prasadam. Hare Krishna.